Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
Let's go again!
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Aaron Nagler.
Don't shut me up!
And Andrew Garda.
I'm freaking velvety smooth.
And here we go.
That's right, folks. Nagler's gone. Garda's in charge. And as promised, we've got an hour-long Metallica marathon. Rockin'! Whoa, wait, hold up. You mean to tell me that the lockout's over? You're telling me that there's actual football going on? Well, hell. I think we're done with Metallica then. Seriously, guys, we're back in business. The NFL lockout, of course, we talked about it last week, is over. Training camps have started, and that leads me to why I'm solo flying again, and why you got stuck with Metallica at the beginning, and not The Cure. I don't know, I think that's what Nagler's into. Well, speaking to Nagler, Nagler is over in Wisconsin at the Green Bay Packers training camp. And that is an annual rite of passage for Mr. Packer himself. And I know he's having a good time. And if you are interested in what's going on with the Green Bay Packers over the last couple of days, go to Aaron_Nagler on Twitter. And he's been tweeting the evening practices. And if you missed it, hell, just go and check out his feed for the last couple of days. But as he's gone, that doesn't mean the show stops. Indeed, the show goes on. We've got a lot to cover tonight. We're going to be talking about Randy Moss. Hall of Famer, yes. First ballot Hall of Famer? Maybe. Going to talk a little bit about the Nnamdi Asamoah dry gulching of the Jets by the Eagles. And what that means for the Eagles. And what it means for the Jets going into the 2011 season. And what they've done to recover. We're going to talk about the trade we've been waiting to have happen for, I don't know, since the end of last season, Kevin Cobb to Arizona, and my thoughts on that. And we're going to talk about some of the other free agency moves, including Zach Miller to Seattle, and where Malcolm Floyd and Braylon Edwards may end up. And if we've got time, we're going to talk a little Broncos as well, because that quarterback situation is a complete mess. So lots of stuff to go over. And I'm sorry, I know there are a couple people on Twitter who are very excited about the Metallica-only podcast, but no more Metallica. What can I say, folks? I'm sorry. So, let's just start right at the beginning.
Straight cash, homie.
Earlier this week, one Randall K. Moss, Randy Moss, called it quits on a very long career. Randy Moss, of course, best known, I guess, lately for his three teams in one season tour of destruction last NFL season. And, everybody kind of thought he'd land somewhere. And as the free agency frenzy kind of went on and drew on, and nobody's really knocking on Randy's door. So, Randy decided, rather than get forced into a situation he wasn't happy with, he would quit. Now, let's talk about Randy Moss. And oh, by the way, right after he quit, guess who came knocking? That would be the Eagles. So, let's talk about Randy Moss here for a second. 985 receptions for a career, 15,310 yards, 161 TDs. That is over the span of 12 years. Absolutely. Let me just put this out there right away. And I want to leave no doubt as to how I feel about this before we get into the rest of this discussion. I believe Randy Moss is absolutely a Hall of Fame wide receiver. Unequivocally, a Hall of Fame wide receiver. He was an amazing player in Minnesota for much of his time there. He revitalized his career in New England. He didn't win a ring, but as you know, we will talk about forever on this podcast, it doesn't mean you aren't Hall of Fame worthy. Just ask Dan Marino. He was an amazing wide receiver. Changed the way that secondaries had to cover wide receivers and the way that some wide receivers attacked the secondaries. Fantastic. The question is not whether Randy Moss should be in the Hall of Fame, because in my opinion, he should. And it's not just about statistics, by the way. Remember what I said. Change the way that defenses played him. Change the way the field looked. Changed how wide receivers ran their routes, played their games. And it's not about his off-the-field crap. Even the locker room stuff. So when Terrell Owens retires and is up for the Hall of Fame, if I had a vote, and I don't right now, but if I had a vote, Terrell Owens would more than likely, I mean, I can't think of an argument offhand for not being in the Hall of Fame, except for he was a cancer on his teams quite often. That said, I want to talk about what's on the field with Terrell Owens. And it's the same thing with Randy Moss. Randy Moss was phenomenal on the field most of the time. And that is sort of the problem. I got into an interesting debate earlier this week. And it was sort of sparked by something. Friend of the program, Dave Goldberg, longtime NFL writer, kind of got into it, I guess, with some of his followers about, in his opinion, and he is a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, that Randy Moss is not a first ballot Hall of Famer. I kind of got back into it the other day on Twitter with Sigmund Bloom, fellow football guy, draft guy, pundit, whatever you want to call us, at Pro Football Focus. And I basically, my question was essentially, all right, Randy Moss is a Hall of Fame guy. Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? When his time comes, is he first ballot guy? It was an interesting discussion back and forth. First of all, I could debate with Sig pretty much all day. He is really good at wheedling you. But, if you follow Bloom, you know the guy's chock full of interesting takes and great observations. And, I respect what the Pro Focus guys do. And I love the chat with them as well. So it was a great debate. And we were going back and forth quite a bit. And I thought I would expand a little beyond the 140 characters. I mean, I had multiple tweets, so it was more than 140 characters. But I thought I would take my little soapbox here to talk a little bit about my issues with Randy Moss as a first ballot Hall of Famer. And let me also preface this by saying, and I'm doing that a lot, but it all kind of depends on who else is going in with him. Who are we up against? Because it'll depend. If it's a lot of scrubs and Randy's getting in that first ballot. But if it's close, and let's remember, you only have X amount of slots for anybody in a Hall of Fame class. So you need to make a differentiation. Now, there were several arguments people were making. First of all, that, character shouldn't come into it. Off-the-field stuff shouldn't come into it. And I dismissed that, as I said just a few minutes ago. That's not what I'm judging Randy Moss on. Randy Moss is off-the-field, whatever. Heck, even his mooning, the Packer crowd thing. And that was a straight cash homie moment there. Even that, to me, that's not a big deal. That's not going to keep him all out of the Hall of Fame. It's not even going to keep him off the first ballot. So off-the-field characteristics, yes, shouldn't count. In my mind, has nothing to do with anything. The other thing is basically the question is whether there should be a first ballot. That the ideal with the first ballot was to try and catch up on the people who should have been in the Hall of Fame already when they first started the Hall of Fame, and it's just sort of still there. We could debate that anytime, but it's not the debate for Randy Moss. The fact of the matter is there is a first ballot. And so you have a limited amount of slots, and there is a first ballot, and it does mean something. So you have to have criteria to judge. And at the end of his portion of the discussion, Sig was basically like, if there has to be a first ballot qualification, then there have to be standards. And that's the truth. If it's you, Randy Moss, and another guy of equal worth, or Randy Moss and another guy you think is very worthy, you're looking at a situation where there's got to be some sort of qualifications. There is a first ballot, so that's what we have to deal with. Complaining about there being a first ballot, that doesn't do anything for you, does it? Again, we could talk about that all day long, whether there should be a first ballot or if they should just say 10 guys, bang, whether you're the first time or fifth time, whatever. Basically, should a player either be in or out? Either you're in the Hall of Fame or you're not. That's not the way it functions right now. Maybe it should, but it's not the way it is right now. So, those things out of the way. My biggest problem with Randy Moss over his career were specifically the 2 years he was in Oakland where he just didn't give a crap. To me, if you're going to compare him against other great wide receivers like a Jerry Rice, Jerry Rice languished in Oakland himself for several years. As far as I can remember, never gave less than 100%. Was in Seattle for a cup of coffee, same thing. Never gave less than 100%. Got banged up, was less effective, all of that. But he wasn't out there jagging routes the way that Randy does. And Randy does that not just during that Oakland phase, not just last year when he wasn't happy to be with the Patriots. Moss does that at any time in any game. No matter how focused he is, he can just completely turn it off. Which makes him a very frustrating guy to watch, by the way. Because, frankly, here's a guy with all the talent in the world who turns it on and off and doesn't give 100% all the time. So to me, that's my biggest hang-up with him as a first ballot Hall of Famer. If it's between him and someone who maybe doesn't have the stats, maybe isn't as impactful, but is a fantastic player and deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and he gave 110% every single day, every single game, no matter what the situation was, no matter what was going on with the franchise, I'm sorry, but Moss doesn't get in on that first ballot. It has nothing to do with hating on the guy. I think he's a phenomenal athlete. I wish he came back this year because I feel like he has another year left in the tank. And he may. He may yet. He filed the paperwork, but as Brett Favre will tell you, that doesn't mean anything. My point is, at this time, that great players, Hall of Fame players, don't quit. Now, some of what was brought up to me were guys like Barry Sanders, who literally quit. Jerry Rice, Carson Palmer. All right, let's go over this. Jerry Rice really wasn't brought up to me as a guy who quits, but as a guy whose skills faded. So let's move Jerry out of it, actually. Barry Sanders did quit. Now, unlike Randy, who quit in the midst of the season, or just flat out quit in Oakland, period, our boy Barry quit in the offseason, which left his team time to contemplate how to replace him. He didn't screw his team over by saying, "I'm done," in mid-October. Nor did he decide, "I hate working here. I don't like Wayne Fonts. The Lions aren't doing anything to help me out. Screw them, but I'm collecting a paycheck, so I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, but kind of jag it, kind of half-ass it." Barry Sanders, every time, look at the film. I mean, you can stop. Stop right now. Go to YouTube and watch his highlights. Or, go see if you could find some NFL films. Barry Sanders, I would doubt that he was going anything less than 100%, unless he was hurt, his entire career. He quit in the offseason, and he quit. He said, "I'm done. You guys won't trade me. I want out." He walked away from the game. But he didn't leave his teammates in the middle of the season hanging. They knew they could rely on Barry Sanders every time they handed him the ball. So Barry Sanders, Randy Moss, you want to compare those two? You're not going to win that comparison in my mind. Now Carson Palmer comes up. Carson Palmer, another guy who quit after the season, or essentially is threatening to quit. The Bengals have moved on. He left them time to do that, to either trade him, which they should, Mike Brown, because then you get something for him, or let him retire. However, I'm not going to compare Moss and Palmer for two reasons. One, because once again, that's a guy who retired in the offseason, not midseason. Two, Carson Palmer started out great, but he's in no way a Hall of Famer. I like Carson Palmer. Seems like a great guy. I think he's been hosed by a crappy franchise. All that said, not a Hall of Famer. I'm not comparing Randy Moss to him. If you put Carson Palmer and Randy Moss together on a Hall of Fame ballot, it's going to be Randy Moss. Like, it's not a fair comparison to Moss. But so that Palmer comparison does not work. So let's go over the arguments here. Sanders retired in the offseason and never gave less than 100% on the field. Rice languished on crap teams, but never gave less than 100% on the field. Palmer never gave less than 100% on the field. Like, I've never seen Carson Palmer just not care. And he's not a Hall of Famer anyway. And all of those guys called it quits in the offseason, not midseason. The other thing that seems to be going on with this Randy Moss conversation is the sort of the all-or-nothing mentality of the internet. One of the things I got pushed back on in this argument was, well, he's a Hall of Famer. He should be in. What are you saying he's not a Hall of Famer? I never said he wasn't a Hall of Famer. Not in this whole discussion. And I finally, I don't remember which of the two of them, but I was finally like, show me where I said he's not a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, maybe. But that's the all. It seems like people around both Randy Moss and other people that you're either in or you're out. There's no gray area. There's no middle ground. There's no Randy will make it year two. He's either in first ballot or obviously you hate him. So let's clear that up, too. Just because people are not on the Randy Moss first ballot bandwagon does not mean they're hating on him. Does not mean that they don't think he was a fantastic player, and does not mean that they don't, like, they have a grudge against him. It has nothing to do with him not being nice to the media. Of course there are people out there who vote that way. The same thing happens to Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was a complete douche. But you're going to get people who are going to vote against him for the Hall of Fame ballot, for other things, for that. Now, mind you, Barry Bonds is in a lot more trouble because of steroids, but in a vacuum, people would vote against Barry Bonds because he was a jerk. That's not right. Randy Moss wasn't always the greatest guy on the planet, but that shouldn't factor in on this particular topic. There's a middle ground. Randy Moss is a Hall of Famer. There's nothing wrong with him not being a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I honestly think that there is more than enough reason for a writer to vote that way. So that's my thoughts. If you have any thoughts of your own on the subject, in general, if you have thoughts, feel free to share them. But on this topic, you can always hit me up, thunderingblurb@gmail.com, or you can catch me on Twitter, way too much, Andrew_Garda, Garda. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And we'll inundate Nagler with them when he comes back next week. So moving on, leaving a straight cash homie Moss behind us, let's talk about Nnamdi Asamoah and how the Eagles won preseason. Because apparently they've won the Super Bowl already. AI. On the one hand, the Eagles have made pretty much every offseason move, period. Like, you could just run down the list, and this isn't even the totality of it. The Eagles agreed to terms with free agent Jarrad Page. The Eagles signed free agent offensive tackle Ryan Harris. The Eagles have reached a one-year agreement with free agent running back Ronnie Brown. The Eagles have signed free agent guard Evan Mathis. The Eagles reached a 5-year agreement with Cullen Jenkins. The Eagles signed Vince Young. The Eagles signed Donald Lee. The Eagles signed Nnamdi Asamoah. By the way, Asamoah, that was like the world's greatest signing. Because nobody had that. Nobody. That's what you call dry gulching the Jets. The Jets, now, there is a lot of discussion as to whether or not they had an agreement that Thursday night. There have been a lot of disputed reports about that. And I've heard now from some sources that are not just random internet callers to WFAN 660 that the Jets thought they had it. That Thursday night, Mike Tannenbaum, Rex Ryan, they'd laid out their offer, and they thought they had Asamoah. And then if you read Peter King, and it gets increasingly hard to do some days, but if you read Peter King's column on Monday, he talks about how the agent for Nnamdi and the GM for the Eagles texted each other at the same time, you know, strangers in the night, exchanging glances or texts, and then called each other at the same time that Nnamdi called to check in with the agent, and how it was like karmic and kismet and all that. That is sort of odd timing, but that's how things get done sometimes. And essentially the agent did what agents do and said, this makes a lot of sense, let's make this happen. And the GM did it. You know, Jets, you know, Asamoah was still kind of waffling on Friday, and I'm sure in some respects he was kind of putting him off a little bit just in case, and he wasn't telling them no, because what if the Eagles deal falls apart? The Jets at some point just were like, we're done, we're pulling it back. And really, I mean, I'll talk about the Jets and how this sort of dominoed for them in a couple minutes, but the Jets, I mean, everybody needs Nnamdi Asamoah, but they didn't need him desperately. The Eagles, they had Asante Samuel. They had traded for Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. I think Asamoah was pretty much a huge upgrade over both guys. They needed to make this happen. And really, I mean, right now the Eagles are a team that it seems like they're going all in. They really have gone after as many different things to shore up this team as possible to make a Super Bowl run. They've shored up the cornerbacks. They've gotten Vince Young to go behind Mike Vick. They've gotten Ronnie Brown to help shore up LeSean McCoy. They're talking to free agents for wide receivers. They've talked a little bit to Braylon Edwards. You know, obviously they're worried about DeSean Jackson holding out for a significant amount of time. I've heard two different reports as to whether he's going to report or not. He's not happy. He's one of two guys that I have serious concerns about right now holding out for a length of time. That's DeSean Jackson and Chris Johnson over at the Titans. And I'm writing the team recap for the for football guys for the Titans. And honestly, that's my biggest concern right there. Chris Johnson is going to hold out, and for who knows how long. And the longer he holds out, the worse it is. But so they're thinking, I mean, this is a team that really was tremendously aggressive in the free agency period. You know, a saying that you hear sometimes, scared money don't make none. You've got to spend money to make money. This is a team that had to go out and be aggressive, and they did. And I am tremendously impressed with the Eagles front office. The fact that they were able to keep the whole Asamoah thing under the radar for the whole week. I mean, rumors were flying everywhere for everybody else in the league. The Raiders were back in. Tampa Bay was in. Tampa Bay was out. The Cowboys were in. The Cowboys were out. The Jets were in. The Jets were out. The Jets were in. The Jets were out. San Francisco's making an offer. The Seahawks are thinking. I mean, everyone else is out there, but somehow Philadelphia keeps it under the radar. That's just impressive. That's just damn impressive for a front office to be able to function that way. And it looked like Asamoah wanted to be there, wanted to be with the Eagles, says he thinks that they give him the best chance to get a ring. And I talked about this last week, that I thought that Houston was a pretty good split, as was Dallas. Like, best case scenario, he can make a lot of money and have a shot at the playoffs and a ring. Better shot with the Cowboys, in my opinion, than with Houston. I think a better shot to make the Super Bowl with the Jets, but not as much money. The rumor is that he left money on the table, taking Philly's offer, but Philly was a good balance. Philly was going to pay him well, and they'll give him a legitimate shot at a Super Bowl. It's a very dangerous and scary secondary right now. The two keys to this Super Bowl run, by the way, and the two key acquisitions, is really what I'm saying, would be Vince Young and Asso. And of course, Asso with Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie and Asante Samuels, it's a ridiculous corp of defensive backs. It's a very fearsome secondary. They can get rid of one of those guys and still be fine. I love DRC, I think, and we'll touch on this in a little bit. I think Arizona was flat out insane to give him up. But, they have Peterson coming in, so I guess it made some sense. So, great secondary core. They're working on the defense. The question is, who's blocking for Michael Vick? I know Osso doesn't play offensive tackle. So, the question is then, when Vick inevitably goes down, because he does pretty much every season, who's going to take care of this offense? Mike Kafka? Not if you want a Super Bowl. No offense to Mike Kafka. I like him. You're going to have to rejigger that offense quite a bit from Michael Vick to Kafka. So you bring in a guy like Vince Young. Now, Vince has his personality problems, but he's very similar in some ways to Vick in terms of mobility and his general strengths. And I know that a lot of people compare Young and Vick just because they're both mobile quarterbacks, but I think their games are similar in that both of them are incredibly dangerous with their feet, and both of them can throw the ball. I think Vick looks like he's a better quarterback than Young maybe ever will be. But basically bringing Vince Young in, because he has some similarities, it's not the exact same quarterback, but some similarities to Vick means that if, when Mike Vick goes down, be it for a game or a length of games, this offense shouldn't really miss a beat the way it would if you go to a Kafka or a Kevin Cobb. You have a guy who is mobile like Vic is mobile, plays a similar game as he does. Can you tell I'm dancing around? Because the one thing that I'm not comfortable with in this comparison is this happens a lot. Guys like Vic and Young get compared to each other quite a bit because they're mobile quarterbacks, but also because they're black. So I want to be clear that I'm not talking about race here, but it's always sort of leering there when you talk about this sort of comparison. But honestly, if you look at those two quarterbacks, both of them are dangerous with their feet. Both of them have pretty decent arms. Vince Young knows how to win. He won with Tennessee. So I think this may be a bigger acquisition than Asamoah, honestly, because Vic gets hurt. I mean, he's not going to change his running style. They're going to try and keep him in the pocket a little more. But this is smart of the Eagles. Rather than trying to cram a quarterback into a different style than what his strengths are, they are forming their offense around that quarterback. And bringing Vince Young in means they don't have to make a lot of adjustments if and when Mike Vick goes down. And I think, ultimately, that is going to make the difference in terms of a run at the Super Bowl this year. I mean, it doesn't guarantee it, but I think it helps quite a bit. So they look very good. Before we crown them as Super Bowl bound, let's just, again, Michael Vick's health is important. A little less important with Vince Young there, but Mike Vick is a better quarterback. So there's going to be a little bit of a downgrade. The offensive line play, Ryan Harris and Evan Mathis, they're not the answers. They're good players, but they're not great players. I guess you could also argue that they're goodish. They're average. And they've got a rough schedule. A tough NFC East. I mean, aside from Washington, the Giants are the Giants. They're always going to play them tough. And Dallas looks like they're going to bounce back. So it's not assured. And then, you get beyond the East. The NFC is filled with Atlanta, who has done nothing but get better, I think, this offseason. Green Bay, who, while they lost a bunch of free agents, they got 19 guys off the injured reserve. The Saints, they're gearing up. There's a lot of very good teams in the NFC. So you can't crown them yet. But the Eagles did everything right, in my opinion, to put themselves in a position to have a shot at getting to the Super Bowl. And as you know, once you get there, anything can happen. So let's reset for a minute, go back to the Jets. Because what now? Have we put to rest the quote-unquote lie of Rex Ryan, the coach who everyone wants to play for? Because in the words of Junior Soprano.
He couldn't sell it. He's not respected.
He couldn't get Osso on the Jets. Now, part of that could have been the money. Probably was. Part of that could have been a really good sell job by some of the Eagles. I don't really downgrade Rex and Tannenbaum all that much for this. I mean, Tannenbaum said it himself. You're not going to bat 1,000. You're not going to get everybody you go after. But even as this came sort of to fruition, and mind you, months ago I was saying, as a pipe dream, it'd be kind of funny. It'd be kind of cool if you had Revis and Asamoah. But you know what? The Jets will retain Cromartie and they'll be very good. I really didn't think much about it. Even when they were saying the Jets were kind of involved in this, early on I was like, well, of course you're going to talk to him. But I mean, they don't have the cash. Well, the Jets found the cash. They just couldn't sell it. What does this mean for that mythology around Rex Ryan? There are plenty of players who still want to play for the Jets. But can he sell it? I think it'll be interesting to continue to watch that sort of thing with free agents over the next few years. The Jets aren't really going to be able to be players, more than likely, in free agency the next few years, because 2012 is going to be cap hell for them. They sort of messed with a lot of contracts. A lot of people took cuts. A lot of people got backloaded contracts, so they were open this season, so they'd have more cap room, and they're going to pay for it next season. So, they've locked some guys up. They locked Santonio Holmes up. They brought back the Crow. Cromartie they're going to have for several years. It's a 4-year, $32 million deal. So they've got some guys. Locked down David Harris. But still, they're not really going to be able to be players in free agency. So to me, losing Asamoah wasn't the end of the world, because they can bring Cromartie back, and he played relatively well most of the year last year. Him and a healthy Revis, that's still a very scary secondary. Comes down to bringing pass rush up the middle and on the edge. So if the Jets can do that defensively, that secondary is going to look really good. So they got to focus on that. They added Plaxico Burress, a 1-year deal worth just over $3 million. It's fully guaranteed. Bye-bye, Braylon. I mean, the Jets may bring him back if he's, willing to be cheap, but rumor has it Arizona's interested in him. They'll pay him what he wants. Allegedly, they're going to do more passing, and they're going to focus as much defensive pressure as they can on the line. Now, this would have been the same issue with or without Asamoah. They need Sanchez to step up. They're going to ask him to do more. They're going to have him pass more. He needs to get that passer rating up. We've talked about this before. Got to get it up, to a 60-65%. 50s ain't doing it. They need Sean Green to step up and be able to run the ball effectively. Now, apparently Joe McKnight's looking good in training camp so far. And if you're a Football Guys subscriber, I'll be doing the Jets training camp reports over the next month. So check it out. But Joe McKnight apparently is looking better than Bilal Powell, but that's to be expected, Powell being a rookie. We'll see if McKnight can keep it up. But Green has to keep it going. Tomlinson isn't going to be as much of a factor this year. Green needs to be consistent. He looks good in training camp right now. The ground game has to keep going, but there's going to be a more balanced game and a lot more passing. So it really does offensively come down to Sanchez. He's going to have to get some chemistry with Burress, but he's going to have another year under his belt of Holmes. You're going to have Holmes and Revis for an entire season. I think that makes a big difference for the Jets. So it'll be interesting to see where the Jets go from here. I feel like they've recovered nicely from losing Asamoah. I think, to some extent, this sort of quiets down the talk that everybody wants to play for Rex. You had how everybody talked post-Hard Knocks. You had the relationship with Revis, a potential Super Bowl, and yet Osso went somewhere else. And I think the Jets really need to look at next year and figure out what they're going to do. Tannenbaum's a great GM. He can figure this stuff out. But they got a lot of restructured contracts, a lot of cap hits. Sanchez has already offered to restructure. Probably will have to next year. Did the Jets overplay their hands financially? That's a question we won't be able to answer until 2012. And as so far as this year, this is a very similar team to last year, and it has to take the next step. Because much like the Rex Ryan, everybody wants to play for him, the Super Bowl guarantee every year, that at some point has to get put to the test. This is a year where it's going to. Moving on, as I said, we brought up Kevin Cobb a minute ago. Kevin Cobb to Arizona for Dominique Rogers-Cromartie. Maybe I can get behind that. Cobb to Arizona for picks. I can get behind that. Cobb to Arizona for DRC and picks? That's just madness. This is madness.
Madness. This is Sparta!
Or it's just Arizona. Cobb's unproven, and they paid him way too much. And then they paid him way too much. They signed him to a 5-year, $63 million guarantee with more than $20 million. I'm sorry, $63 million with more than $20 million guaranteed. This is a guy who threw for 2,082 yards and 11 touchdowns, 14 interceptions in his career thus far. He has a 60% completion ratio in his career. In 2010, he threw 189 passes for 115 completions, 1,197 yards, 7 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Kevin Cobb may be the answer at quarterback for them. For $63 million, 20 guaranteed? What has he done to earn this? What? How is he making that money? That's insane. That's Whittle Rich is what that is. Now, Larry Fitzgerald's very happy. He's already come out and said, hey, you know what? I want to restructure a long-term contract because they're serious about winning. But, I mean, looking at the Cobb thing, so they lose DRC. Now, Patrick Peterson is signed. He's going to be in camp now. He's a great replacement. But one thing that we've noticed in the NFL the last couple years is you win with a very good secondary. You need a good defense anyway. But you win, you're going up against some great quarterbacks if you want to make the Super Bowl. Even within this division, you're going to see Sam Bradford twice. Maybe Alex Smith rises from the ashes of his career. But they have a tough schedule anyway. Having Rogers-Cromartie and Peterson there would have been something else. But that's not happening. So they better hope whoever is across from Peterson steps up. Traded Tim Hightower to Washington. Clears the way for Ryan Williams. I think he's going to be more effective than Wells or Hightower. It's going to take him a little time. So Wells still gets the bell cow spot. He's still going to be the first running back here. But I think Williams overcomes him. If not this year, definitely by next year. You know, one piece of advice to Kevin Cobb is just to throw to Larry Fitzgerald. As our friend Sigmund put it, throw to Larry Fitzgerald even if he looks covered. I mean, ultimately, my opinion with Arizona is not so much about the money being spent, but how it's been spent. Is it wise money? It's hard for me to look at Kevin Cobb and what he's done and say, this is a guy worth a 5-year, $63 million contract, much less the $20 million guaranteed. That's mad money. That's crazy money. It's hard for me to wrap my head around it. So moving on, we're going to leave Arizona. Of course, you know, Arizona, Philadelphia, New York, not the only places that had some free agency moves. Taping this Wednesday night. Tuesday, we saw Zach Miller spurn Oakland for Seattle. Now, a major motivation for this was former Oakland coach Tom Cable. Apparently, Zach Miller figured he had a deal with Oakland, and then they ran around signing a bunch of other free agents and didn't bother getting back to him or finalizing anything. That's that deal in principle that hosed the Jets with Asamoah. But so, Tom Cable heard that he was still available, gave him a call, said, I'm going to do everything I can to bring you on here. And Seattle sold him. They brought Miller and his wife up to Seattle. The Seahawks gave him the grand tour, treated him like a king. Bang, Zach Miller's a Seahawk. You know, we were giving the Seahawks a bit of a, I guess a little crap for their free agency moves earlier. They're just kind of collecting, like, second-string quarterbacks. Adding Sidney Rice and Zach Miller, though, that's not bad. They're working on improving the offensive line. Got some great weapons. I don't know that Tarvaris Jackson is going to be able to take advantage of that, but Andrew Luck might next year. Matt Barkley could next year. They may be positioning themselves long-term for some really interesting things, but Oakland's got to be real bitter about that. Al Davis has got to be foaming at the mouth. But that's what happens when you let your guy hang. The Jets took that chance with Cromartie. They gambled and they won. Other teams have done that as well, and they've gambled and won. In this case, Oakland lost, and it's going to hurt them. It's going to hurt them in that division. It's going to hurt them quite a bit. The big question, aside from where's Braylon Edwards going to go, because I know you're all dying to know that, is where Malcolm Floyd might land. We saw some question marks with Floyd about whether he'd go back to San Diego. Now it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Baltimore's very interested, and the Vikings are interested. Now, Floyd, you know, he didn't quite do as well as everybody expected him to last year, but he did pretty well. He's an athletic wide receiver, pretty fast, doesn't really have a problem with going up to get the ball in traffic. I'll be honest, I mean, Baltimore, he'd probably look pretty good across from Anquan Boldin while Torrey Smith developed. I mean, and that may be part of it, because the Ravens brought in, of course, Maryland wide receiver Torrey Smith and Tandon Doss. So, they may not want to spend a lot of money on Floyd, because long-term, they know they've got these other wide receivers in the queue. I think he'd look good against across from Anquan Boldin. I think the Vikings almost need to make an offer. I mean, they've got Bernard Berrien. They've got Percy Harvin. They need someone opposite of Percy Harvin. They need someone else to be able to open things up for Peterson and to open things up for Harvin. But sounds like Baltimore is going to be the one to nab Floyd. I think that's going to be a pretty significant signing as well. I think he's a good player, and I think he's being overlooked a little bit because of the market and because of the brief period we have with free agency. But I think the Vikings should make a hard run at him. Edwards is interesting. The Jets moved on. They'd take him back at the right price, but it's not going to happen. You know, Edwards, it's a combination of a dry market like Floyd and just too many off-the-field shenanigans. I want to say Shanahanigans, but he's not a Redskin. Arizona, they've let some of their wide receivers go. They've got Early Jusay. He's still there, but he's often hurt. Not 100% even now. So we're looking at Fitzgerald and whoever else shows up in camp. I don't know. So Braylon Edwards, you know, there's another team that might want to take a look at Malcolm Floyd. But Edwards right now, there's a lot of rumors of him going to Arizona. I don't know that he's going to get the money he wants or the long-term contract. But a 1 or 2 year contract, I think at this point, is his best bet. So we'll see. But those are two of the big guys still sitting out there right now. One of the other guys that's still out there, or at least for trade bait, not a free agent, is Kyle Orton. Wow, I mean, at this point, Denver has kind of botched the quarterback position. And some people are like, I'm surprised John Elway hasn't managed these quarterbacks all that well. Mike Lombardi was out on Twitter and on NFL Network and essentially said, you know, I've said for a long time that I don't think Tebow's in Denver's long-range plans. I think they want to see what they have in the kid. But Josh McDaniels was his big advocate, and Josh McDaniels is now in St. Louis. John Fox, John Elway, not all that sold on him. Now, from what I understand in Denver, Denver was very set on having Tebow get his shot this year. Not because they were in love with him, but because they had an investment in him and they need to know what they have. But he's just not playing well. He's not looking good. And we always knew he was raw. We always knew it was going to be a 2 to 3 year project. But he's not really stepping up, not working with the ones, which, I, you know, a friend of the show, Cecil Lammy, has been at Dove Valley for the training camp. You can follow him, Cecil Lammy, on Twitter, and you can get all the Denver Broncos updates. You can go to the Shark Pool at Football Guys and get him there as well. But he'll tell you, like, Orton is playing on fire. Brady Quinn. What bizarre world have we entered in when Brady Quinn is out playing people? You know, what the hell is going on in Bizarro World? Like, Bizarro World shouldn't be that bizarre. Tebow's struggling. Now, Cecil feels as though perhaps Tebow's working with, you know, the third string guys, the lower string guys, because it'll get him more reps. Orton's playing really well. He's going to get more of the first team reps. But honestly, the way it breaks down right now is Orton's the quarterback. The Broncos came out today and said, Orton's our quarterback. He's our starter. Is that a little bit of smoke to try and get some trade interest again? Maybe. I mean, the Broncos did a good job, you know, around the draft, sort of couching their interest in various players, including quarterback. And I think it could be. But the fact is that Orton's playing well. And as long as he's on the roster, I don't think you can keep him on the bench. He doesn't want to be on the bench. Brady Quinn's finally playing well. Right now, Brady Quinn apparently could start over Tim Tebow. What a mess. What an absolute disaster at quarterback for Denver. I mean, I guess disaster in terms of embarrassment of riches, maybe. But let's be honest, this is not what the Denver Broncos expected to have happen. It has pretty much gone the opposite of everything they wanted to have happen. What do you do here? If Orton's there and outplays Tebow, do you start him? If Quinn is there and outplays Tebow, do you start him? At what point do you admit that Tebow was a bad choice? Can you? I mean, it seems like the Broncos right now are desperately trying to prep their fandom for the fact that Tebow's not going to start this year. I think they were dead set on having Tebow start, and I think at this point, because Orton's still there, because Quinn's playing well, it's just not happening. I think for his development, it's not a bad thing, but they're building this team. They got to know what they want, and let's be honest. I mean, Orton plays well. But let's see him when he's not wearing a practice jersey. Let's see him on the field in a preseason game, and then let's see him during a regular season game. And I think you'll get the same Orton you always get, which is fine until it really matters and crunch time comes, and then he collapses. Then he is not going to win. He's not going to put a team on his back and win. Tebow can. He may not have the actual ability to do it, but he's a leader. Quinn's biggest problem, from everything I've heard from people in Denver, is confidence. And it seems like he's playing with confidence now. I mean, so you got three potential starters. Maybe Quinn's not all that likely. But right now, Orton's in charge. It sounds like Denver's trying to get the fan base prepped for Orton to be the starting quarterback. And we've already heard boos elsewhere. Sperano heard the boos. For Chad Henne, we want Orton, says it turns his stomach. Well, yeah, I understand being upset. People come to your practice. They're supposed to be Dolphin fans, and they're booing your quarterback. Henny's not very good. And I was a big, big Chad Henne supporter. I still want the kid to do well, but I think Orton is an upgrade. Matt Moore, you don't want to write him off. Russ Landy, friend of mine, and you know, works over at Sporting News, big draft guy. You know, A, he was saying he doesn't know that Tebow's ever going to be able to be a starting quarterback, which is a conversation he, Cecil, and I had on the air a few years ago when Tebow was drafted. But he said, don't sleep on Matt Moore. Matt Moore's not a bad quarterback. Matt Moore was horrible last year, but the year before he did well. Which Matt Moore is the real Matt Moore? I think the Dolphins right now are betting that 2009 Matt Moore is the one that you're going to see more of. But so, you know, the Dolphins already know what it sounds like when you don't have the right starting quarterback. Don't think that the Denver Bronco faithful will not let the Broncos hear it if Wharton's starting week one. If he wins, you know, winning cures everything. But they were ready for Tebow. It was Tebow time. Timmy Football, Football Jesus was coming. He was going to save them. But, listen, I'm 8-8 guy. You know, Nagler thinks they're going to win, like, negative five games. I think that they were going to go 8-8. I still think, I mean, with Orton, it's even more likely. But 8-8 is like a best-case scenario. With Tebow, best-case scenario. And that's as much schedule as anything else. But Tebow's not taking him to the Super Bowl, not this year. So I don't know. If I'm Elway, if I'm John Fox, what do I do? What do you do? What's your take? Let me and Aaron know. You can hit Nagler up, of course, Aaron at cheeseheadtv.com. You can email me, thunderingblurb at gmail.com. Nagler will be back next week, allegedly, unless he gets trapped in the snow of Wisconsin. And don't lie to me. I know there are polar bears up there. I know even if it's August that there's like 14 feet of snow. It's Green Bay. It's always cold. But we'll be talking, of course, some training camp. Talk a little bit about who's getting hurt, and there have been a bunch of injuries already. How the first preseason games are going. Take you around the league and get you prepped for football, because football is back, folks. I'm ready. I've been ready for months. We are ready to go. And we will be ready to go each and every week here at Cheesehead TV on The Hard Count. If you want to check out what I'm up to right now, those of you who are Football Guys subscribers can check out. I've done a bunch of spotlights lately. And I'm in the midst of finishing up some team reports. I did Green Bay. Just finished Jacksonville. Finishing Tennessee tonight. So if you're a Football Guys subscriber, you can check that stuff out. If you're not, think about it. If you play fantasy football, 50,000 pages of content every season. Definitely some of the best stuff on the net. And of course, you'll get my Thursday night preview articles as well. That's worth the subscription right there, let's be honest. But the training camp reports start coming out next week. And to me, that's flat out one of the single best things Football Guys does. And I think it's also one of the most overlooked. That and the game recaps, overlooked by most fantasy football people who have a subscription to Football Guys. The training camp stuff is phenomenal. That, to me, that alone is worth, you know, the $25, $26 bucks that it costs you to be a subscriber. I'm just saying. I might be biased. It could be possible. And also, a quick mention here. I just want to stump a minute for myself and Nagler, The Hard Count, Cheesehead TV as well, for the first annual Untitled Sports Media Awards Project. A group some of you will not be familiar with, not surprisingly, called Blogs with Balls. It is a gathering of sports-centric blogs and media. So they felt like they're, you know, there's a ton of award shows for entertainment, sports, like mainstream media. But really, internet sports writers aren't getting enough recognition. So they thought they'd create one. So if you go to blogswithballs.com, go to BWB4/USMAP. That would be the Untitled Sports Media Awards. And fill in some stuff. Nominate Cheesehead TV for sports site, for team-specific site. Myself, Nagler, Brian Caravu over at Cheesehead TV for sports writer. And for podcast, might I humbly submit The Hard Count, and Packers transplants. You could also nominate myself, Aaron, anyone else you want to, for best tweeter, stuff like that. And of course, I feel I'm a rising star, so perhaps you want to vote me for that as well. But so go over to Blogs with Balls, blogswithballs.com/BWB4/USMAP, or you could just go to the Blogs with Balls site and go to BWB4 and then nominate. Nominate us often, nominate us enthusiastically. And, you know, if there are a couple other podcasts you like, sure, it's not a big deal if you nod them too. Anyway, so head that way. If you have any questions, I'll happily fill out stuff for you. Just give me your email address. That's going to do it. Like I said, next week, Nagler's back, less Metallica, more football. For the absent Aaron Nagler, lost in the wilds of Wisconsin, if you see him, for the love of God, please check his name tag and send him back to the address on it. This is Andrew Garda. You've been listening to The Hard Count. See you same bat time, same bat channel next week. Thanks for coming by. You've been listening to The Hard Count with Aaron Nagler and Andrew Garda.
Let's go again! Word!
Straight cash, homie.